30 years in law enforcement, beat cop to deputy sheriff, working 10 hours a day to protect and serve. Last year in Oregon, there were 13,000 citations and arrests for marijuana. Yes on 91 will allow law enforcement to focus on serious crimes, unsolved murders, rapes, missing kids. Measure 91 also mandates that Oregon develop standardized tests for driving under the influence, which we don't have now. That'll make our streets and highways safer. Yes on 91.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, October 27th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world, and just 8 days away until we legalize marijuana in Washington, Alaska, and Oregon, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. I was going to go with Washington, D.C. first. Messed up the whole thing. Let's try that again. Just 8 days away until we legalize marijuana in Oregon, Alaska, and Washington, D.C., until we legalize medical marijuana in Florida and Guam, and until we bring you Marijuana Election Night 2014, Tuesday, November 4th, starting at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, right here at 420radio.org. We'll be coming to you live from Measure 91 headquarters here in Portland, Oregon, where we are seeking to become the third U.S. state to legalize marijuana. It's going to be a beautiful thing. Make sure you join us on Tuesday, November 4th, 3 p.m. Pacific time. We'll be here until the final polls close in Alaska. So it's going to be a long night. We've got reporters who'll be joining us from all across the country as well, giving us their live take on what's happening in their state, their county, or their city as they vote on marijuana reforms. A couple of other reforms you may not know about. There's one in Washington state that would vote to overturn a law that exempts marijuana from being taxed like an agricultural product. That's right. In Washington state, marijuana apparently is not agricultural. Well, you can change that in Washington if you vote on this measure. Learn more at WashingtonNormal, WANormal.org. Also in California, they've got Proposition 47, something like that, but it's 47. I know that. And that is a defelonization bill. That is to remove any possible felonies for people that are just possessing drugs. So check that one out. More information at Drug Policy Alliance, drugpolicy.org. All right, on today's show, for our radical rant at the end of the show, we've got a great series of videos that I made over the weekend. This Sunday, the Great Oregon Pot Debate was shown on K2 at 9 a.m., right in the middle of all the Sunday morning talk shows, and there's nothing good for your campaign against marijuana if during the middle of the debate, they have to run a chyron on the screen explaining how you lied about babies dying from marijuana. Oh my goodness, it was hilarious. I've got some new videos I made up from Josh Marquis, the Clatsop County DA. You can follow him on Twitter at CoastDA if you'd like. He's probably got me blocked. That'll come up in the Radical Rant today. Also on the show, half past, it's Monday. We're going to have to talk with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, get our cannabis Q&A in order. There's a new study on marijuana and IQ, and today begins the hearings on marijuana's Schedule 1 status. We'll talk to Dr. Mitch about that. Also on the show, in Behind the Headlines, you know how we always wonder, where are these good cops? They keep saying there's good cops out there. Where are they? Why don't they speak up about the bad cops? Got a really tragic tale to tell you from Yakima, Washington, that explains why some of those good cops keep their mouth shut. It's to save their life. And also, we've got our 420 radio news in the news today. We are going to take a look at that evidentiary hearing. Also, Senator Jeff Merkley becomes the first U.S. senator to support marijuana legalization. An offensive t-shirt in the San Diego Grow Raid has people talking. Also, news from California Highway Patrol. Remember Chips? Apparently, Ponch and John are passing around naked pictures that they steal from arrestees' cell phones. Also, a mom in Minnesota facing 2 years in prison for CBD oil. And we've also got a new video from High Times from their 40th anniversary party. Check that out in our Drug War Data Mining segment. Plenty of stuff coming up, but the news is next. Stick around.
Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio. Tune in, turn on, get hot.
I'm Richard Harris. I directed Oregon's Division of Addictions and Mental Health and led drug treatment programs for years. I can tell you that treating marijuana use as a crime, arresting thousands for marijuana use, is a complete failure. That's why I'm supporting Measure 91. By regulating marijuana for adults and taxing it, we support drug treatment, prevention, schools, and police. Measure 91 means more treatment and less wasteful prosecution. It's a better approach.
Toker Talk Radio, weekdays at 4 and 7 Pacific.
In all my years on the streets, it's hard to recall a single time where marijuana use itself was the cause of a violent incident. As a police officer, I do believe that passing ballot measure 2 will allow law enforcement to focus on serious issues in Alaska. To me, the regulation of marijuana means safer communities. I'm voting yes on 2.
This communication was paid for by the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. Top contributors are Marijuana Policy Project, Drug Policy Alliance, and Thomas...
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, October 27th, 2014. U.S. District Judge Kimberly Mueller begins an evidentiary hearing today and over the next 3 days on the basis of marijuana's Schedule 1 designation over prosecutors' objections. In an April 22nd order, she said lawyers for the defendants had presented expert declarations, quote, showing there is new scientific and medical information raising contested issues of fact regarding whether the continued inclusion of marijuana as a Schedule 1 controlled substance passes constitutional muster, end quote. Judge Mueller issued the order in a case that, based on the evidence so far, has little to do with medical marijuana. The defendants are charged with growing a large tract of pot plants on forest land, and there's been no indication that it was for medical use. But defense attorney Xenia Gilg from the Normal Legal Committee said that's irrelevant if they were charged under an unconstitutional law. As Gilg acknowledges, it will not be an easy case to win. She and her colleagues must prove not merely that the federal law is misguided based on current research, but that it is entirely irrational. An initial ruling would apply only to the current defendants, but the impacts could be broader if higher courts weighed in. U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley plans to vote for Measure 91, which would legalize marijuana for recreational use in Oregon, making him the first U.S. senator to support legalization. Quote, I lean in support of it, end quote, the Democratic senator told Sahil Kapoor of Talking Points Memo. Quote, I think folks on both sides of the argument make a good case, end quote, Senator Merkley said. Continuing, quote, and there is concern about a series of new products, and we don't have a real track record from Colorado and Washington. But I feel on balance that we spend a lot of money on our criminal justice system in the wrong places, and I lean in favor of this ballot measure, end quote. A t-shirt reading, Fuck the Growers, Marijuana is Still Illegal, worn by cops during a raid of San Diego dispensaries, has sheriffs and DEA fuming. San Diego's Narcotics Task Force conducted a marijuana raid in Imperial Beach on Wednesday, and during the operation, a photojournalist spotted an agent wearing a t-shirt with the following writing on the back. Quote, Marijuana eradication in San Diego, California. Fuck the growers. Marijuana is still illegal. End quote. A representative with the San Diego branch of the Drug Enforcement Administration said, quote, DEA does not condone the shirt and we find it inappropriate. The matter has been referred to the sheriff's department, end quote. In response to the issue, San Diego County Sheriff Bill Gore said, quote, this shirt is not approved or condoned by the sheriff's department. Its message is vulgar and not representative of who we are and the values we uphold. Appropriate administrative action will be taken, end quote. On Friday, Mercury News obtained court documents showing that collecting nude photos from the phones of arrested women was a game for Officer Sean Harrington and other California Highway Patrol officers. According to the arrest affidavit, quote, Harrington said he first learned of this scheme when he was working in the Los Angeles office. Harrington said when he was assigned to the Dublin office, he learned from other officers that they would access the cell phones of female arrestees and look for nude photographs of them. Harrington said if photographs were located, the officers would then text the photographs to other sworn members of the office and to non-CHP individuals. Harrington described this scheme as a game, end quote. In one text message exchange between Harrington and another officer, Harrington promised to send the officer nudes and said, quote, just return the favor down the road, buddy, end quote, with a smiley face. Minnesota mom Angela Brown is facing 2 years in prison for child endangerment charges stemming from giving her son CBD oil from Colorado before Minnesota legalized it. When Angela's son Trey was hit in the head during a baseball game, he was placed in a medically induced coma. Following his awakening, Trey suffers depression, daily migraines, muscle spasms, and uncontrollable outbursts. Angela drove to Colorado and obtained a bottle of CBD-rich cannabis oil. Angela said after a few drops, Trey's pain melted away. But the oil was confiscated by police after Angela explained to Trey's teachers why he was suddenly doing so much better in school. The sheriff's department confiscated the oil and county prosecutors charged Angela with child endangerment requiring child protection. If convicted, she could face 2 years in prison and $6,000 in fines. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, October 27th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville.
420 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization.
Measure 91 means regulating and legalizing marijuana for adults, freeing up time and generating revenue so police can better protect us from serious, violent, and unsolved crimes. The system needs changing. Yes, on 91, it's about time.
My name is Richard William Riggs. I'm a judge in Oregon. In 1998, I was elected to the Oregon Supreme Court, where I served until October of 2006. I've been asked to give my views about the new approach to marijuana initiative that is going to be before the voters very soon, and I'm happy to do so. I've read the measure, and I'm going to vote for it. And the reason I'm going to vote for it is because I think that it's inevitable that marijuana is coming to Oregon in one form or another. And I hope it comes in the form of a good bill like this one. If we're going to have marijuana in Oregon, this is the way to do it. Drugs and marijuana particularly play a huge role in the economic engines of most of the local gangs. The gang-related violence that occurs is often as a result of bad drug transactions of one kind or another. I think the proper legalization of marijuana and the control of it in an appropriate way is a substantial step forward to eliminating some of those problems. Using the criminal justice system to enforce certain societal social norms is kind of a waste of resources. It takes away from the criminal justice system dealing with forcible rapes and murders and so forth. I've read this measure and I'm going to vote for this measure. And I think anybody who reads the measure and gives it careful thought will probably join me in that vote.
Welcome back, everyone. 14 after the hour. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And today we're taking a look at a story that I've picked up from the freethoughtproject.com. Thefreethoughtproject.com. Good cop could go to jail after reporting misconduct in his department. You know, oftentimes we tell these tales of these bad cops, not just within the war on drugs, but even the recent events in Ferguson, Missouri, and other incidences where overwhelming lethal force is used and so forth. There's so many of these tales of cops that are stealing drug money and taking drugs and selling them and doing terrible things that we always ask, where are these good cops? And we always seem to have this disclaimer, you know, not all cops are that way, you know, just bad apples. You know, where are the good cops? Well, folks, this story tells you why, if there are good cops in a department, they're oftentimes better off keeping their mouth shut if they don't want to die. In this story, we have the tale of Yakima police officer Adam Basford, and he was pursuing this armed suspect, Antonio Cardenas. He's a recently paroled felon who is suspected of aggravated assault with a firearm. and caught this guy as he was trying to hop the fence, but didn't pull his firearm. The cop did not pull his firearm. Adam Bosford did not pull his firearm because there was a young girl nearby and a bunch of bystanders. Didn't want to start pulling off rounds with a bunch of bystanders around. So he's grappling with this Antonio Cardenas, who's about 6 inches taller, about 60 pounds heavier, working this guy. Now, fortunately, Bosford, the cop, had martial arts training, was able to subdue him and took him down with a rear naked choke to subdue the guy, because he called for backup, and none of the other cops that were in the area would come to his aid. One cop actually came to his aid, saw Bosford, looked him in the eyes, made eye contact, and turned and ran away. That was Officer Booker Ward, who turned and ran away. There were two other Yakima police officers on bicycle patrol nearby. Bosford said, quote, "They heard me get shot. They heard me scream for assistance. They were just two blocks away, but they were 15 minutes from the end of their shift, and they went back to the station instead of coming to my aid." Bosford would find out later the bike patrol officers, quote, "didn't think the overtime would be approved," end quote. Now, that seems pretty scary, right? It seems pretty bad. These cops wouldn't come to his aid because of overtime, or because maybe the first cop that saw what was going on with the bigger guy wrestling him was scared and afraid. Bosford actually did get shot in the leg, grazed in the leg, when the Cardenas went for Bosford's firearm, and they were struggling with the gun, and it went off, and it shot the cop in the leg, right? But what this story shows, as you read more in this story, you find out that Officer Bosford was actually a good cop who had reported misconduct in his department. He'd actually called some of his own fellow officers out and reported them for some of their misconduct in the field where they were abusing suspects. From that day forward, Bosford never, ever got any backup when he called for it. Not just this event where he was struggling with the armed assailant who could have killed him, when two bike officers wouldn't come in because they wouldn't get overtime and the other guy just saw it and ran away, but every time he'd ever called for backup in any situation, for some reason, everybody was always busy on patrol, nobody was ever available, because Bosford crossed the thin blue line. Bosford went and told on members of his own tribe, his own gang, he was a snitch. And that's what the good cops, you know, when they say the guys on the streets, they talk about the gangs, they just say the police is just another gang. They got it right. It seems like that morality has passed on to the police as well. Snitches get stitches, right? That's the way our police work. And that's why the good cops won't speak out. That's why the good cops, who know that this drug war is not just a failure, but a tragedy on our society here, that it's eroding the respect that citizens have for law enforcement and continuing to corrupt and enable and empower the bad cops among them. Boy, these good cops become a dying breed, literally. And now, as this situation goes on, this police officer, Bosford, is being prosecuted for going after Cardenas with the rear naked choke and having possibly threatened him after the event when it appeared the guy was going for something that was stored in his pants. Now, had Bosford just done the status quo and shot and killed this guy, if he'd have just gunned him down in the street like Darren Wilson did in Ferguson to Michael Brown, or that other cop who's getting all this. I mean, they literally have GoFundMe pages and fundraisers raising 5-6 digits worth of money for these cops who gun people down. But this cop who didn't want to gun someone down, who saw there was bystanders nearby, because he was a good cop who told on the other bad cops, they were going to let him die right out there in the street. And now want to put him behind bars for twice the amount of time that the guy who shot him in the leg got. Yeah, the guy who shot him in the leg, this would have been his third strike felony, but for some reason the district attorney downgraded it to a simple charge of attempted assault. Shot a cop in the leg, a two-time felon, gets a misdemeanor attempted assault. The cop who told on other cops that got shot in the leg, he might be doing more time. This is why a lot of the good cops won't speak up. And this is why the war on drugs needs to end now so that we can start fixing this.
Oh, gnarly.
Not so gnarly, Mr. Spicoli. Not so gnarly at all. It's 420 in Denver, Colorado. Hope you guys are having a good 420 wherever you are. 320 here in Portland. When we come back, we've got the High Times 40th anniversary party. I understand Susan Sarandon was there. I've got this thing for buxom redheads. Plus a bonus video from Josh Marquis when we return.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of The Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit MJBA.net to join today. That's MJBA.net. Weejacated Talk Radio with Ruby Lexington, Nikki Fox, Steve the Caregiver, and Jeff Kaufman from Arizona. Replaying Mondays at 10 Pacific on 420radio.org. Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about 7 people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. For over 4 decades, High Times Magazine has been the chronicle of the underground marijuana culture. Now, as marijuana goes mainstream, High Times is stronger than ever, running the best-selling magazine, their high-traffic website, and producing 5 U.S. cannabis cups and 1 international cannabis cup per year. Check out the latest news from High Times in our High Times preview.
What's up, Stonerverse? Bobby Black here, coming to you from the DL Club here in New York City, where we are celebrating the amazing anniversary, 40 years of High Times Magazine. This is an amazing, epic party. We have celebrities, we have staff, past and present, and we are at the forefront of marijuana legalization. So let's go check out this party. It's going to be banging.
It's wonderful to be here, and I think the only person we're missing is Tom Fersad.
We used to have parties where we'd have tanks of nitrous oxide. You guys have a nitrous oxide tank here?
No comment.
Okay, well, that was our trademark in the early days.
I was on hand from the very beginning with Tom Fersad back in 1973 when he came to my apartment with a couple of guns in a bag and asked me to put them in my closet until he came back to retrieve them and offer me a job where he basically paid me seeds. I'm just very, very happy that it's still alive after 40 years. It's a vindication of all the work that we put into it and the vision that we had, that it's still here. It's really great.
We're trying to educate people about marijuana and also show them that there's a lot of people from all walks of life that consume cannabis responsibly, and we want to legalize it all over.
It's been great. Such a ride. Like, I'm not a guy who smokes pot every day, always all day, and sometimes I go like a year or two without smoking pot, but I've always been really, really pro-marijuana. From the first time I stepped on the Stern Show, it was good radio, but it was always sincere, and then the guys from High Times loved me. One of my favorite things in the world was a 2-page spread they did on me in my garden.
Compared to what we were doing, now, mind you, when we were doing what we were doing, we didn't know if it was legal. When you took photographs, we didn't know if that was evidence against you. Nobody had ever done that before.
It was honest. You know, you're pro-pot, and they thought I was crazy, but now we're not crazy.
We've got 23 states and a District of Columbia where patients can legally smoke marijuana. We've got two states where adults can legally buy it and grow it and smoke it. It's perfectly legal. Yes, it's been a long struggle, but I think that the real story is we're winning.
We were convinced in 1976, 77, we were convinced it would be 2 or 3 years before it was legal. And the question was whether the alcohol industry would get it or the tobacco industry. Then came Nancy Reagan and a few other things. What I'm really glad about is that the big industries are not involved and that it's other people scrambling for it. It's exciting to see what has happened.
You are our first recipient of the Courage in Media Award for your actions to legalize cannabis, for what you've done for the movement in Alaska and nationwide, for your courage to stand up for your beliefs. We salute you.
Hopefully this wakes other people up. Hopefully we all take a stand. If you're in a position to make a difference, stop standing on the sidelines. Talk to people, share your stories. And Alaskans, get out and vote on November 4th.
Charlo Green from Alaska there, closing out the High Times 40th anniversary party there at the DL. Thanks, guys. District Attorney Josh Marquis for the No on Measure 91 campaign has not read Measure 91.
There's nothing in there about how the things are going to be packaged like you've seen.
Section 7, paragraphs 1 and 2A grant OLCC all the regulatory authority over sales and production.
There's nothing that says how it can be marketed. There's nothing that says how many hundreds of stores there can be in Portland.
Section 7, paragraphs 2F and G grant OLCC authority to regulate and even ban marijuana advertising. Section 29, paragraph 2A grants OLCC authority to limit the number of pot shops in a city or county.
And in fact, it's a two-pronged thing. One is, has the OLCC, which has done such a great job of keeping alcohol out of the hands of teenagers.
Teen drinking dropped from one-half to one-third in the last 7 years.
We'll regulate marijuana for commercial sale, but then completely unregulated and untaxed, people will be able to have 8 ounces of marijuana, which is about 400 joints.
Section 6, paragraph 1 only allows 8 ounces of marijuana in the home if one is growing 4 plants.
We actually rolled it to find out. A pound of edibles, an ounce of hash oil, 72 ounces of cannabis liquid, which I never even heard of, and each household can grow 4 plants.
Oregon has the same public possession, edibles, and liquid limits as Washington, and lower home grow, home possession, and hash oil limits than Colorado. Measure 91 has taken the best from Colorado and Washington laws and improved them. Learn the facts. Vote yes on Measure 91. This advertisement produced by the Russ Bellville Show and is not sponsored or endorsed by the Yes on Measure 91 campaign. You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on...
Treating marijuana as a crime in Oregon has failed. Police are spending way too much time working on simple marijuana possession cases. Too many people are being busted. Oregon wastes millions of taxpayer dollars while illegal drug dealers are making a huge untaxed profit. But after Measure 91 passes, we'll have a better approach, a smarter approach, like what's happening in Washington, where marijuana-related arrests have plummeted. Oregon police will be able to refocus their precious and limited resources on serious crime, and Oregon's Measure 91 can save and generate millions of dollars. Oregon needs a better approach to marijuana. Vote yes on Measure 91, paid for by Yes on 91.
This November, whether you see the words medical marijuana on your ballot or not, the issue is there. From the halls of Congress to your state capitol or city hall, politicians are already making decisions on medical marijuana policy on your behalf. This election, make sure they are representing you. Every vote is a vote for medical marijuana.
Mike Schwab is a former middle school science and math teacher. Currently, he works with children daily as an after-school program leader.
Currently, kids have easy access to marijuana with little understanding of its impact. We can take better care of our kids through Measure 91 with strict regulations and funding for proven marijuana education and prevention programs to keep kids from using it. Under our current marijuana laws, one mistake can ruin a life. Measure 91 removes unfairly harsh punishment for marijuana offenses and gets more tax money to local police and drug prevention. Vote yes on 91.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Half past, and we've got Dr. Mitch on the line. Welcome back, Dr. Mitch.
Pleasure to be here.
We're two Mondays away from marijuana legalization, marijuana election night 2014. How are you feeling about the prospects?
Cautiously optimistic, more so for some than others, but I honestly would rather be the Pollyanna and say, they're all going to pass. Oh, yeah.
Yay. Well, that's good news. I like that. That makes us all feel better. Folks, get your questions into our chat room, or you can dial in at 971-533-7111. But we always start off giving Dr. Mitch the first word in cannabis science. And, you know, this is one of those rare occasions where my guest on the show is doubly appropriate. And that is, you are also the chair of the Normal Board of Directors. And I wanted to talk about this hearing that starts today on assessing marijuana's Schedule One value or constitutionality, I suppose. What can you tell us?
I've been working behind the scene on the scenes on this, but Paul Armentano's been really stellar. And Dr. Greg Carter gave a phenomenal presentation and got cross-examined by some of the weirdest attorneys I've ever heard, and answered a bunch of obscure, ridiculous questions, including how much marijuana he smokes, which I think should be completely irrelevant. And all I can say is I'm cautiously optimistic that rationality may win out here.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, some of the headlines that I've seen bandied about, like, could marijuana be legal everywhere by Halloween? What would be the effect on this trial? What are they trying to determine?
Bottom line, we really need to re-examine just this notion that marijuana belongs in Schedule 1. And Schedule 1 means no approved medical use, high addictive potential. And anybody who knows anything about the marijuana literature knows that both of those are completely false. And it's suddenly dawning on at least local Supreme Court justices that that really is the case. There really is no way to say that marijuana has no medical use or that it has high abuse potential, and so it really doesn't belong there. If we can get started in that direction, I feel like, in truth, federal prohibition could fall soon after.
Mm. One of our legal eagles in the chat room wants to know if you have any idea when the transcripts of the hearings will be available.
I don't have a link to that. I'm trying to get the link to the brief that was filed in order to get this revisited, and as soon as I get that, I'd be happy to send it along to anybody who emails me.
Yeah. The email address is 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. Got another question from our chat room. Runner wants to know if the THC in topicals would show up on a drug test, like if you used a lotion.
Alas, if it's at a dosage where you can feel it, it's going to make it to the urine screen, at least those 20 nanogram per milliliter ones.
Hmm. Okay, and 20 nanograms, is that a standard when they're doing workplace testing or accident testing?
Sad but true, that's getting to be the trend.
Hmm. So they're actually going lower than they have in the past?
Unfortunately, that 50 nanogram per milliliter, which I think is also kind of ridiculous, has basically lost out. There's a bunch of drug testing companies that are actually pushing for that lower threshold, I think in part, so they'll find more positives and make it seem like they're doing something.
Yeah. How odd that the employers would be reducing their threshold when all of the athletic commissions are raising theirs. Even the NFL raised it to 35.
I mean, I feel like the 50 is still ridiculous because it doesn't really say anything about actual impairment. It's really not about what's in your pee. It's about what you can do.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a look at some of the science that's going on lately. Washington Post's blog posted some information coming out of the University College of London on marijuana and IQ, the oft-discussed subject of whether or not kids would lose IQ points from smoking pot. What can you tell us about this one?
Well, as we've said before, when other data like this came up, if you control for socioeconomic status, if you control for alcohol use, what a surprise, even kids who smoke marijuana don't have IQ deficits relative to those who've never touched it. And I've said time and again, when you don't control for, you know, statistically relevant things, you can make your results say almost anything you want. Obviously, cannabis use isn't randomly assigned to people, and the folks who report using and are candid about it often have other things that might contribute to their IQ. I do want to emphasize, though, they did find a small, literally a 3% decrease on test scores among the kids who had used cannabis more than 50 times, and I'm afraid it's that they might have gone to school high. And, of course, you can't learn anything new high unless your tolerance is pretty intense. And I again, want to sort of hammer home this idea that marijuana is not for the morning before school. It just isn't.
Yeah, yeah. All right. The quote that I found in particular that I liked out of this study was, in particular, alcohol use was found to be strongly associated with IQ decline. No other factors were found to be predictive of IQ change. So obviously we need to repeal the 21st Amendment.
And this is what's so sad. This insanity about cannabis has essentially caused people to ignore genuine contributors to brain development like binge drinking. And that, I think, has really been a misplaced use of our efforts.
You know, I was researching some data on this to rebut Josh Marquis for one of my videos I made on the Measure 91 debate, where he made a snide remark about the Liquor Control Commission that would be in charge of regulating marijuana. He said, oh, it's done such a great job of keeping alcohol out of the hands of kids. And I checked it out. Since 2007, the binge drinking or the drinking rate of kids has gone down from like 48% to 31% from 07 to 2014. So that seems like they've done a pretty good job.
And in fact, they did it not by busting a bunch of people, but by spreading the word that binge drinking actually has negative consequences and pointing out that it's not the norm to binge drink, that far and away, most Americans, particularly teens and college students, do not crank down six beers at a shot, but in fact often have two beers or less per drinking episode and rarely drink more than three times a week.
And this is something I always address when we, you know, one of the stock fears or assumptions prohibitionists use is this idea that if it's legal, well, more kids will smoke pot. And I always think, really, whether or not more kids smoke pot isn't as relevant as whether or not harm goes up. Could there be a substitution effect among teens that might swap out the keg for a joint or a bong when it comes to graduation time?
The economic data have been confusing. So one looks like a substitution and one does not, at least in the big studies. But I want to emphasize, too, that the Colorado data suggests that teen use has gone down, not up. I think taking away that forbidden fruit, rebellious aspect of the plant somehow makes it lose some of its appeal.
All right. And another cannabis science story here. Out of Bloomington, Indiana, researchers at Indiana University's Bloomington Department of Psychological and Brain Sciences were awarded a $275,000 grant from the National Institutes of Health to study the effects of marijuana on brain connectivity in current and former users. What could they actually be getting money to study something good about marijuana, or is this another let's see what bad thing it did?
I mean, I got my PhD at IU before it was the brain sciences. It was just the Department of Psychology. And I don't know these researchers personally, but they're really from a schizophrenia tradition. And they're good neural network modeling folks. So basically what they do is they plug the data into some pretty complicated statistical programs, and they will find something. Like, it's just going to happen. What I'm worried is that they're going to emphasize that somehow cannabis exposure in the brain makes the brain less efficient, or, you know, they're going to have some words around that, in part because that's how you keep getting funding for this sort of thing. But in fact, if they can't translate it into some real behavior that actually matters, I'm really going to be super critical. And you'll notice that my advisor, of course, is still at Indiana and not a part of this grant.
Okay. You know, when I heard this, the title of a study like that, I get to thinking, being a creative person, as to how cannabis affects me. And it tends for me to be able to take very separate things and be able to synthesize them into where their commonalities are. These compare and contrast kind of exercises are fun and easy for me, and they seem to be more fun and easier when I use a little cannabis. So if you could design such a study, how would you find out if such a thing is true?
In truth, Russ, I feel like you're genetically at an advantage when it comes to divergent thinking. Man, I have heard you put some wild ideas over the years. Cannabis or not, I feel like individual differences are definitely contributing. But obviously the way to do it is not the way it's been done in a lab, which has been they get folks high when they can and then have them do these divergent thinking tasks right then. I feel like the creative part is really, and I feel like I've had this experience even with you, in that incubation period where you jam all the facts into your head and then you need to like let it go for a minute. And to get high then and then come back and then pop, suddenly they connect. And it may not be when you're high. It may be when you wake up the next morning. And I feel like the way to do that research correctly would require a considerable expense and may not be the top priority at the National Institute of Health.
Hey, just because I'm the only guy on the planet who's ever tied the war on drugs to the Third Amendment, that doesn't mean... Okay. Folks, if you want to get your question in for Dr. Mitch Earlywine, but you want to do so a little more privately, I understand sometimes, we're talking about things that are still very illegal in red states. You can get it in through email at 420research@gmail.com, 420research@gmail.com. In our last minute here, Dr. Mitch, just wanted to give you a chance to opine once again on these Halloween candies. Apparently there's now a company that's marketing a test kit so you can test your gummy bear to make sure it's not got THC in it.
I mean, in truth, even the old days, my friend Barry Glasner in Culture of Fear showed that the poisoned Halloween candy stuff was mostly urban legend, and the only real case, I think the parents had actually poisoned their own kids. Mm-hmm. So if you're worried about this, watch out for your parents.
There you go. And don't let your kid be eating unwrapped candy anyway. That's
exactly. I mean, everything should come in a wrapper, and then it's going to be fine. I assure you, nobody who's actually shelling out for their own edibles is going to give them to a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Not at $15 a chew. It's not going to happen. All right, Dr. Mitch, thank you so much for joining us again here on our Cannabis Science segment. And again, 420research@gmail.com if you want to email. We'll talk to you again next week.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Folks, we're going to take a little break, give you the anti-drug PSA of the day, because we're all about being unfair and imbalanced, I guess. And when we come back from that, we've got more videos from the Great Oregon Pot Debate. Talk about divergent thinking. Just the other night, I realized that at the beginning of the debate, he was making fun of the prosecutor for being a prosecutor last in the 80s. And then he closes the debate with an anecdote from the 80s. Can't make this stuff up. Stay tuned. We got four new videos from the Great Oregon Pot Debate. We'll talk more about that in hour two as well.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
This is the brain activity of a normal 14-year-old. This is the brain activity of a 14-year-old after smoking marijuana. If you use pot, you're not using your brain.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420 Radio.
The pistachio. Green, natural, and available without prescription in all 50 states. He's fine.
The truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Homosexuality.
Down the centuries, you have slurred the meaning out of the words, we, the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 46 after the hour, and yesterday wasn't a great Sunday for me, considering how the Packers played, but the morning was pretty good. In the morning, on 9 a.m., our local ABC affiliate played the Great Oregon Pot Debate, featuring Inga Frickland and Richard Harris on the Yes on 91 side, and Ronald Schwartzler and Josh Marquis on the No on 91 side. And it was just, you know, I'd seen the debate. I was at the debate. I was a part of the debate, as a matter of fact. But this is getting to see it on the Sunday morning high def TV during the same time you'll Meet the Press is on and all the other, you know, Sunday talking head shows. So this is the time when, you know, older, more politically minded voters are tuning in. And so to get to see that debate on the full hour, 9 a.m. on a Sunday, and right smack dab in the middle of it, right around the half hour mark when people change channels if they had missed, you know, and made it the second half, they got to see Dr. Ronald Schwartzler talking about how marijuana killed 5 babies in Colorado, and the TV station ran the disclaimer chyron on the bottom of it, basically calling him a liar. Oh, it was wonderful. Here's some more highlights featuring mostly Josh Marquis. Enjoy.
Dr. Ronald Schwartzler repeats the No on Measure 91 campaign's lie about marijuana and prison.
Just like it makes no change in being able to take marijuana into a prison. Can't do it.
You can take pot into prison. It will, with this law, it does allow you to do that, as I read the law anyway.
ORS 162.185 defines the crime of knowingly smuggling marijuana into a prison or possessing marijuana as an inmate in prison as a Class C felony. Measure 91 maintains ORS 162.185's Class C felony and adds a Class B violation in cases of accidentally bringing your marijuana to prison if you work or visit there. Nobody would ever write marijuana regulation to allow smuggling into prison. Forget No on 91's scaremongering and learn the facts. Vote yes on Measure 91. This advertisement produced by the Russ Belville Show and is not sponsored or endorsed by the Yes on Measure 91 campaign. District Attorney Josh Marquis from the No on Measure 91 campaign worries about marijuana DUIDs.
Although traffic fatality has been falling in Colorado for about 7 years, you know, the causation versus correlation, we're not sure. But we do know one thing in Colorado. The number of people testing positive for THC in fatal accidents is up 100%. Marijuana is very difficult to measure. And one of the things Measure 91 doesn't have, like Washington does, is a presumptive level. And THC has some very peculiar qualities that make it very difficult to determine for law enforcement if somebody's intoxicated.
Josh Marquis says it's difficult to measure THC intoxication because of its peculiar qualities. Then he complains that Measure 91 doesn't have a presumptive limit for measuring THC intoxication. Yet on March 21st, Marquis won a DUID conviction against a 19-year-old man with no active THC in his system, who Marquis himself said, quote, "In fairness, I can't say this guy was entirely under the influence of marijuana," end quote. Seems like law enforcement already has all the tools it needs to enforce marijuana DUID that is already illegal. Oregon has had tens of thousands of medical marijuana patients for over a decade now. If marijuana was going to affect road safety, we'd have seen it by now. Yet Oregon's traffic fatality rate is equal to Colorado's. Both states' traffic fatalities have been falling for years, and our rates are 23% lower than the U.S. average. Measure 91 dedicates tax revenue for the study of marijuana-intoxicated driving and increased patrols. Vote yes on Measure 91. It's a sensible approach. This advertisement produced by the Russ Belleville Show and is not sponsored or endorsed by the Yes on Measure 91 campaign. District Attorney Josh Marquis from the No on Measure 91 campaign can't decide if 1980 is relevant.
So feel free to respond. You know, you used to be able to smoke on planes too, but you know, times have changed, and it's frankly also been 25 years since Inca's been a prosecutor, and never in Oregon. This is not Illinois in 1989. This is not Louisiana in 1960.
Josh Marquis tells us that times have changed. Ms. Frickland's decades of experience in law enforcement are not relevant to Josh Marquis. That was the 1980s. This is Oregon debating marijuana legalization in 2014. Let Josh Marquis use this anecdote from 1980 to explain.
I just want to read you an essay he wrote called Fugitives and Refugees. Some of you may have read it. My first week living in Portland in 1980, I called my grandmother for her birthday. This is from a payphone on the Fred Meyer supermarket on Barber Boulevard, just downhill from my two-bedroom apartment and stoner roommates. My grandmother and I talk until I have no quarters left and the operator cuts the line. This is mid-sentence and I have no money to call and tell her what happened. Instead, I go home and fire up the bong. The big party bowl smokes like a bonfire of dope, and my roommates are in the kitchen cutting up a small block of hash. There's a knock on the door. It's the police. My grandmother is panicked. Portland's the big city, and she thinks I was mugged on the payphone. She calls the police and begs them to make sure I'm okay. It's impossible the cops don't smell our dope, but all they do is tell me to call home. After a scare like that, the party's over. That's basically the way law enforcement has treated marijuana in Oregon for the last 30 years.
We have a minute left. Hold on, folks.
In the past year, Oregon law enforcement raided the homes and businesses of the owners of three medical marijuana dispensaries in Ontario, Tigard, and Medford. These establishments were providing marijuana to legally registered patients, so police lied to get medical marijuana cards to entrap them into marijuana sales felonies. These people, who were all medical marijuana patients themselves, one a new mother, are now all convicted felons because they followed the medical marijuana law. Times have changed, Josh Marquis. It's 2014, and nobody believes your reefer madness anymore. The sky has not fallen in Washington and Colorado. Vote yes on Measure 91. This advertisement produced by the Russ Belleville Show and is not sponsored or endorsed by the Yes on Measure 91 campaign. District Attorney Josh Marquis for the No on Measure 91 campaign thinks marijuana tickets are no big deal.
They say that 10,000, 12,000 people are arrested. No, they're not. They get a site. If anybody's gotten a speeding ticket, it's uncomfortable, unpleasant. It's not a free ride in a police car, because 150 of them got cited in my county. I talked to the cops. I said, when do you cite people for marijuana? And they said, basically, when they blow smoke in my face, literally. We don't destroy people's lives for possession of 27 grams or less of marijuana.
And I find it a little incredible that you would minimize this to say this doesn't really matter. It's like getting
arrest,
it's
Richard,
not like
it's
getting
not
a traffic ticket. Would you let me finish it?
God forbid we would ever disrupt anybody's life for you know, health or the welfare of the community. You know, that, and they're also going to say, they say, arrest and citations. Well, that's like saying, you know, heroin and aspirin. I mean, an arrest and a citation are totally different things. And so when there are 10,000 citations, those are citations. Those are not arrests. They're not on your record. I could print out your record and show you. It won't be there. One of the more interesting consequences, by the way, the other side constantly says criminal consequences. That means is that you have a criminal record, presumably one that an employer could look at. If you're convicted of less than an ounce, twice, three, four times, you don't have a criminal record. I know Portland has a ban the box thing, but even they can maybe ask a question eventually, have you ever been arrested? The answer is no, even on your fourth less than an ounce. If it's more than an ounce, yes. So there are not criminal consequences unless you're possessing a lot. That's basically the way law enforcement has treated marijuana in Oregon for the last 30 years.
We have a minute left. Hold on, folks.
The presumptive fine for a speeding ticket in Oregon is $110 if you drive up to 10 miles per hour over the limit, and up to $435 if you drive over 30 miles over the limit. The presumptive fine for possessing less than an ounce of marijuana in Oregon is $650. So possessing a little bit of marijuana in Oregon is punished more harshly than driving 99 miles per hour on the freeway. The maximum fine for speeding in Oregon is $2,000, even if you're driving 99 miles per hour through a construction zone. The maximum fine for possessing less than an ounce of marijuana in Oregon is also $2,000. If you speed in a school zone, your fines will double. If you possess less than an ounce of marijuana within 1,000 feet of a school, which is most people who live in a city, you can be arrested, jailed for a month, and have a lifelong criminal record. When you're ticketed for speeding, you're not fined again if you have a passenger in your car. When you're cited for possession of less than an ounce, if you were sharing less than 5 grams of marijuana with a friend, you can be cited for delivery of less than 5 grams and fined another $650. If you were sharing more than 5 grams with a friend, your delivery charge can earn you an arrest, a year in jail, and a criminal record. Speeding tickets usually involve little interaction with police. Possessing less than an ounce of marijuana can lead to long interactions with police that include frisks and vehicle searches. Speeding tickets are public records that employers can search when hiring employees for driving positions. Marijuana citations are criminal violations that must be revealed by applicants for certain jobs, licenses, and security clearances, like district attorneys, for instance. Police don't just cite people for marijuana when they blow it in a cop's face, as Josh Marquis claims. Since marijuana has a strong odor, any interaction with a police officer by a person possessing less than an ounce of marijuana can lead to a $650 ticket that few people can easily afford to pay. That fear of police interaction harms our society when someone possessing marijuana won't call police to report crimes they witness, for fear that they, too, will be punished by the police. We ticket speeding to discourage people from recklessly harming other drivers. Ticketing marijuana possession isn't discouraging anyone from smoking marijuana. But 10,000 marijuana tickets a year does cost police and processing time, and it puts undue financial burden on responsible adults who are not harming anyone. And the 10,000 who got a ticket for a small amount of marijuana got it from the 3,000 who were arrested for growing or selling a large amount of marijuana. It's time for a better approach that handles responsible adult marijuana consumption with regulation, not police. Learn the facts. Vote yes on Measure 91. This advertisement produced by the Russ Bevel Show and is not sponsored or endorsed by the Yes on Measure 91 campaign.
So there you have it, my latest videos in the No on 91 collection. You can find them. There's, I think, 13 of them now. at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/radicalrus. Look for the No On 91 campaign playlist if you want to get them all. And as I make new ones, I think I got a couple more I can make. You can get those in the playlist as well. That's all the time we got for hour one, but stay tuned for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We're going to talk more about Good Cop, Bad Cop. Also, a little bit more about Josh Marquis's performance. Oh, it was beautiful. Loved it. You know, put on your medical expert who says babies die from marijuana, your DA who punts on legal questions, and your campaign head who wrote 8 out of 12 of the No On 91 ballot statements. That's all the time I got. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. I'm Paul Steiglitter. I spent 30 years in law enforcement, beat cop to death.